So this week we have two sedras, Vayakhel Pekudei. This is the end of the book of Exodus. And we read, because of the calendar and the way things work out, we actually read two readings this week. So the first is Vayakhel. Moshe gathers all the Eden together, and he gives them the final instructions on building the tabernacle. And the second sedra is called Pekudei. Ela Pekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan Eidos. These are the accounts of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, which was the Mishkan HaEidos, the tabernacle of Eidos means testimony. And then, of course, this week is Parshas HaChodesh, the last of the four readings that began with Parshas Shekalim. Before the month of Adar opened, we read about the Machatzis HaShekel, the half shekel that every Jew had to give at this time of the year. And then we read Parshas Zohar to remember what Amalek did to us. That's what we read the week before Purim. And last week was Parshas Poro. We were reading about the Tahara of the red heifer and how we used the ashes of the red heifer to sprinkle on us once we'd come in touch with death, and that was used to purify us of the residue of death. And then the fourth of the readings, where an extra Torah is taken out on Shabbos and Shul, is Parshas HaChodesh, which talks about the new moon and how this month is the head month. The month that's coming, the month of Nisan, is the head month, Rosh Chodeshim. And all the laws of the celebration of the new moon, which we did every month. And then there follows that, the laws of the Pesach, and these laws were given to the Eden in Egypt, before the last of the plagues, the killing of the firstborn. God says to Moshe, Chodesh Azeh Lechem, Rosh Chodeshim, on the 10th of the month, you should take a lamb kid, for one for each household, and on the 14th, we slaughter it, and then we make Pesach. And that was the night, Seder night, when everybody was sitting there eating the Paschal lamb. God appeared in Egypt, and that was the slaying of the firstborns. And then the Egyptians drove us out of Egypt, and that was the Exodus. So the parasha of Pekudei, the accounts, which is the last chapter in the book of Exodus, describes how Moshe gives account of exactly what was used in the construction of the Mishkan, the tabernacle. A tabernacle is an English word. It means a building or a construction that is designed to be taken down and reassembled, disassembled and reassembled. So anything that a building, a shed, a boat, or anything that is designed to be pulled apart and reassembled is called a tabernacle. There's two names the Torah gives for the tabernacle. One is Ohel Moed, the tent of meeting. And this one is called the Mishkan, the dwelling place. And the Mishkan is a similar word to the word Shekhinah. The Shekhinah means the dwelling presence. And Mishkan means the place where someone or something dwells. So God told us, V'asu li'migdash, says to Moshe, tell the Eden to make me a sanctuary. The word Migdash has its root the word Kodesh, meaning holy. In Latin, that's sancta. So a sanctuary, a holiness. V'shachanti b'soichom, and I will dwell in them. And the Gemara says, it doesn't say v'shachanti b'soichoy. God doesn't say, make me this sanctuary and I will dwell in it. But rather, make me a sanctuary and I will dwell in them. So everybody has to make a sanctuary for God inside them. And everything that we've been learning in these last weeks concerning the Mishkan, the Tabernacle, the Ohel Moed, the Tent of Meeting, the sanctuary that we made, it's all a metaphor. Yeah, like the whole Torah. It's a history, it describes events. But the Torah is Nitzchi, the Torah is eternal. So everything that is in it, all the instructions that we're given, even those that are very far-fetched, that only apply, let's say, to the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, and they tell about the rituals that he performed once in a lifetime or once a year. So if the Torah is Nitzchi, if the Torah is eternal, what does it mean? Why are we learning about something that was happened in the wilderness, you know? And the answer is because it's a metaphor. Besides being a record of a historical event, it's a command to us to do things. So, Rashi says here, Pasuk begins, the verse begins, Ele pikudei ha-mishkan. These are the accounts of the Mishkan, Mishkan ha-edus. So why does it say twice, Mishkan, Mishkan? These are the accounts of the Mishkan, and it was a Mishkan of edus. Edus, and ed is a witness. So Rashi says, because the Mishkan itself, this tabernacle, this sanctuary, was a witness that God had been mevate on the Maaseh Egel, that God had forgiven the sin of the golden calf. So the Noiz Desha, the son of the Ishbitzer, says, well, you know, that's how we usually translate Rashi, that the Mishkan, the tabernacle, testified to the fact that God had forgiven us for worshipping the golden calf, and you know that we began to build this tabernacle when Moshe came down from Mount Sinai the second time, the third time. It was on Yom Kippur, and the following day we started to build the Mishkan, and you know Moshe came down with the second set of tablets on Yom Kippur. So we had worshipped the golden calf, and Moshe had come down, then he'd gone up to pray, and then he'd come down again and picked up some stones, and so it was three sets of 40 days and 40 nights, and from Shavuos, which is the sixth of Sivan, if you count 120 days, it comes out to be Yom Kippur. So there is a connection between the golden calf and the Mishkan, but the Nois Desha, the son of the Ishbitzer, says, why does Rashi say, this teaches that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mevater on the Maaseh Egel, which mevater, levitur, means concession. God conceded. Like, you know, your children are fighting. This one says, you know, I want this candy. This one says, I want this candy. You as a parent, you say to one of them, look, let your brother have it, right? And he says, okay, you can have it. So he's been mevater, the word vitur in Hebrew, it means to concede, you know, say, all right, you can have it. Take it, you know, it's all right. I'm not going to bear a grudge, and I'm not, you know, I'm here. Yeah, okay, you can have it. Usually when a child is mevater, a child concedes, you know, parents is gewalt, you know, that was really nice of you. Just to let your brother have it, you know? So the vitur means to concede in a way that, you know, you don't bear a grudge, you don't say, ah, well, now you owe me one candy, you know? That's not vitur. Vitur means, you know, like, it comes to sometimes, you know, you come in shul and somebody's got a wedding going on, somebody's got bar mitzvah, and you know, you both want to be called up to the Torah, and one of them says, all right, you know, you go. That's called vitur.
How do you spell that in Yiddish, in Hebrew, or in English, either one?
Vav vav yud taf resh.
Vav
vav yud taf
resh.
Please, not now. So, what does it mean in this context that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mevater on the Ma'aseh Egel? So, he says, the Eden, when it came to make the golden calf, we came to Aaron. It says, and all the Eden gathered around Aaron when they saw that Moshe was delayed coming down the mountain. And they said to him, Vayomru Elov, Kuma Seilonu Elohim, come make for us gods, Ashi Yelchu Lefonenu, that should go before us. Because Moshe, the man, you know, he's brought us out of Egypt, we don't know what's happened to him. So, the Noiz Desh says, really, what the Rashi is telling us, and the real deep message, is not that God forgave us for worshipping the golden calf. But vitalonu means that God conceded and he said, yeah, you did the right thing. I don't bear a grudge. Here, I'll give you, you can have it. And so, what was it that we asked? We asked two things. We said to Aaron, please, you be the person who stands in between us and God. We want you to be the middleman, and we want God to walk in front of us. We want God that we can see. And in fact, this Mishkan that we built had both of these elements in it, because when it talks about the Aron, the ark, it says in the book of Numbers, "Va'aroin bris Hashem noisea lifnehem," and the ark of the covenant of God traveled in front of us. And when we were journeying through the wilderness and we disassembled the ark and we disassembled the whole Mishkan, so the ark was carried on poles, and the people, the Levites who were carrying the ark, they would walk in front of us and we followed them. And so really, this is a demonstration of that demand that we made. We want gods that walk in front of us. Right? So saying Hashem, that God viter, that God conceded, means that God said, all right, here you are. And then the other thing that we all gathered around Aaron, you know, the difference between Moshe and Aaron in the Kabbalah, we talk about Shishvina de Malka, that Moshe was like the best man of the king, and Aaron, Shishvina de Matronisa, he's like the best man of the queen. And you know, when it comes to having a wedding, you have the best man, he's the person who walks with the groom, makes sure he's tidy, makes sure his, you know, shoes are shined, and makes sure he's carrying the ring. You know, the best man's job is then to bring the bridegroom to the chuppah. And the best man of the queen, his job is to bring the queen to the chuppah. So Moshe brought God to the wedding. Aaron brought the Jewish people to the wedding. And that's how it was at Sinai, that Moshe brings, so to speak, brings God down to the world so that we can connect to God. And Aaron brings us up to God and makes us aware of how precious and how desirable and how attractive we are. So we gathered on Aaron. When Moshe was gone, we gathered on Aaron and we said, you know, you've got to be the one. We said to him, get up, Kuma Seilonule, make us a god. So now Aaron, with the tabernacle, with the sanctuary that is made, Aaron becomes the one. So when we talk about Vitalonu, that it's not God forgave us, but rather that God said, okay, so what does this mean? When I do a sin, I go, what is, as a Jew, there can't be a worse sin than avodah zarah, than idol worship. There's no worse sin than this. I mean, as an individual, you know, murder perhaps, but as a people, as a nation, you know, it's like the ultimate betrayal of who we are is this paganism, this spot of paganism. So to say then, not that God forgives, but rather that God says, it's nothing. It's nothing. Ah, take it. I don't even mind. In one sense, it's almost as though, and this is what the Ishbitz is getting at, that God is saying that your teshuvah, your repentance, has turned what could have been the worst thing into a mitzvah. It's turned it into a positive. Because if a person does a sin, it drags other sins with it. But here, we've got all these mitzvahs, the whole Mishkan, all the tabernacle and the karbanot, the sacrifices, and all these celebrations and rituals have come as a result. See, it's God saying, no, I'm turning what you did into a mitzvah. So what that means is that for us, as we're saying, the Torah is nitzri, the Torah is eternal. Therefore, the building of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, this is something that everybody does in their own lifetime. Each of us, we have through our life, in our narrative, in our story, we have this ability to build a tabernacle, which means that the worst thing we've ever done, the greatest betrayal, that we have betrayed our soul, the things that a person does that really undermine and corrupt their own innocence and so forth, these things that we've done that have seemed to us as like the equivalent of the worshipping a golden calf, that in fact God is mevata. God says, that's really not important. What's important was the reason you did it. Because if you look inside the worst thing you've ever done, there was a motive. That motive, look inside. So we really wanted to have, we didn't want an angel. God said, after the Ten Commandments were given, God said, you know, I'm sending an angel, you better be careful, but the angel's going to lead you. And we were really saying, no, we don't want an angel, God. We want you to come down and manifest physically in the space that we are, in things. We want you here on earth where we can see you and we can follow you, and we want someone who can take this, the best out of us, and offer it to you as a priest and so forth. The same holds true for each one of us, for everybody. We can take that golden calf that we worshipped and we can examine it, and we can see what it was. What was the desire? I mean, the act may be really not to be talked about. It's just too gruesome. The things that we've done in our whatever, you know, let's not even bring that up. Look inside the motive. Look inside the reason. What was the desire? What was the longing that was in the heart that led us to become the person who could do such a sin. And if we can find the and look at the part of ourselves which was capable, was moved so strongly by the desire to, for whatever reason, to pervert that and turn it into something that was bad. Admittedly, it was a sin. But underneath, inside, then you find that place in which your heart is connected to its source and your soul is connected to God. So, we are told back in Parshas Terumah, right at the beginning, where God says to Moshe, tell the Eden to bring an offering, gold, silver, copper, and then there was red wool and purple wool and all the different animal skins and so forth, and wood. There were three offerings. The first one was the shekel, or the half shekel that everybody had to give, and that was used to buy the offerings, the public offering sacrifices that were given in the tabernacle. That was the first Terumas HaMishkan. The second Terumas HaMishkan was everybody had to give a half a shekel, and that was used to make the sockets, the silver sockets that were at the bottom of each of the boards. The Mishkan, the tabernacle, was made of parts that could be assembled, disassembled, and so there were these wooden boards that made up the walls, and at the bottom of each board were two pegs, and those pegs fitted into solid silver sockets. So those solid silver sockets were really heavy. They weighed like a hundredweight each, and they stabilized the boards so that they shouldn't fall. And those silver sockets, they were poured from the silver that everybody donated. So twice we gave a half a shekel. One was used for money to buy the animals with which that was sacrificed, and the other was used to actually pour these sockets. And then there was the third terumah, there was the third offering, and there everybody was invited to give however much they wanted. And a dover, there was no fixed amount. And the Torah tells us that there was so much that Moshe had to make a big announcement saying, enough, enough. People brought more, and then they went home and they found something else to bring, and they took off their jewelry, they took off their earrings, their nose rings, their necklaces, they took off every adornment that they had that was precious metal, and they brought it. And then they went home, they found, oh, look, there's this silver candlestick. All right, let's go, let's take that. And then, and so forth. So, not everybody gave the same amount. Not everybody has the same heart. Not everybody has the same depth. You can't compare. You know, some people are genuinely generous. Some people have to fight with themselves to give. Some people are stingy. So, when the tabernacle was made, one of the miracles was that everybody could see their own donation. It's like when you looked at the tabernacle, you could see a glint of where your donation had gone. You could see, oh, in the gold, I look at the menorah, I can see in the menorah there's a ring, I can see it, I know that my bit of gold went into the menorah. And somebody else says, ah, the wood that I gave, if you look at the sacred, the holy ark, it's there inside, underneath, I can tell. It was a miracle. Now, the Ishbitzer says, Ele pikude hamishkan. The word pikude means something that stands out. There are many, actually, many different translations of the word pikud. It can mean to count, but it can mean it sticks out. So, ele pikude hamishkan, it stuck out. Everybody's donation stuck out. Even though the whole thing, when it was done, was miraculous. It was so miraculous that we, when we were making the Mishkan, when we were assembling these the basic materials, and when we were putting things together, you know, it's not like you could go to a jewelry store and say, excuse me, can you sell me some gold? There was no such thing, right? So everybody had to become like a little workman, a little craftsman. And we became, you know, like, you don't have to teach a bird how to make a nest. You don't have to teach a spider how to spin a web. It's an instinct. We became like animals in the sense that our instincts took over and we were capable of crafts that we'd never learned. We were slaves in Egypt. What did we know of silversmithing, of purifying metals? What did we know of such things, of making tapestries? So when we looked at the final temple, when we looked at the sanctuary, it became a Mishkan HaEdes, it became a sanctuary that was a testimony to everybody who'd given something. Now, in the past, we've talked about the different levels of awareness of God. You know, if I look outside in the world and I become aware of God, usually it's through chesed, you know. It's very rare that somebody looks at the world, you know, in torment and says, oh, there must be a God in the world, right? You see a tsunami, you know, a volcano. Usually somebody's looking out at a sunset, somebody's listening to the birds, somebody sees something beautiful in the world, you say, Gewalt, there must be a God. Who else could make something so beautiful? So usually when I become aware of the presence of the divine in the world outside, it's as a result of chesed, kindness. There's some love flowing through everything. There's some beauty and peace and whatever. That's the level of Avraham. Su'umorim einechem, lift your eyes on high, u'ru'umi bora ele, see who created these. That's the legacy of Avraham, that we can look out into the world. Wherever we look, we can see God. Then there's the level of Yitzchak, which is that we look inside ourselves and see God. And that's to become aware of being in the presence of the divine, that part of you is so sacred, so holy. It's a chelik elikamimah. It's like it's a part of God. And to really become aware of that side in you, so it's terrifying. It's terrifying in the sense of, it can be paralyzing with fear to realize that as a human, how I jeopardize and I, all the things that I do to that divine part of me, you know, that I go blundering through my life as though, you know, I'm made of flesh and blood, but you know I'm not. I'm this divine creature. I'm a part of God, and I just, instead of realizing who I am and where I am, I walk through this world with blinkers and in darkness, and just it's about me, 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 and you know, if I stop and really think about me, my soul inside me, what's going on, and become aware of the Shekhinah inside me, that's the level of Yitzchak, that's Gevura, that's not Chesed. Inside, to feel God is Gevura. So there's another level, and this is what happened with the Mishkan HaEdus, that when I looked at the Mishkan, I wasn't just able to see my own donation. I was able to see everybody else's donation. And just imagine I could look at you and see all the worst things that you've ever done. Because everything that had to do with the Mishkan, everything that comes to us as part of the tabernacle, comes as a result of finding out why you worship the egg, what the connection was with the golden calf. The tabernacle, the Mishkan, the sanctuary was a flip side. It's like a mirror image. The donation that I gave to the building fund for the tabernacle was the flip side of what I wanted when I took off the nose rings to give to the making of the golden calf. The expression inside, the connection of to the divine, wanting to be connected to God, and all those things that came out with the, as we said, with the making of the golden calf, you know, wanting God to walk in front of us, and wanting Aaron, wanting a priest who could bring us up to the worship, all these things that manifested in that sinful way, that manifested in the giving that we gave to the Mishkan. So just as I said before, when I looked at the Mishkan, I could see my own offering. When I looked at the Mishkan, I could see my neighbor's offering. And if I was a big tzaddik, if I was a very holy man, and my neighbor was not, do you think that I would think to myself, you see, my offering is up there, it's like in the menorah, his offering is down there? No, that's not what I thought. Mishkan HaEdus, Edus LiYisroel Shevitalem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this Rashi is saying that the tabernacle itself is testimony that God has said okay. So the bottom line is, he didn't just say okay to me, he said okay to my neighbor as well. So when I look at my neighbor, let's say my neighbor is the worst Jew in the world, if I look at the Mishkan and I see his donation, which was given with his, maybe he was mean, maybe he was like stingy, but I could see inside it that no matter how stingy he was, inside it was his connection to the divine. So we said, when I look out at the world and I see God, that's chesed. When I look inside myself and I see God, that's gevura. When I look into somebody else and I see God, that's tiferet. So that's what happened when the Mishkan was made, that we all became aware not just of how our desire had brought down this dwelling presence of God, v'asu li migdash v'shechanti b'seicham, but I could look at the sin of my neighbor and see inside it the deepest connection to God. Imagine you look at someone and you see their faults, and inside their faults you see the divine, the connection, the very presence of the Shekhinah, not in their holiness, not in their sweetness, in their meanness, in their worst trait. That is the meaning of the Mishkan, Va'osu li Migdash v'shachanti b'seichem. I want to bless you and me, that our eyes be opened again and again to be able to look at each other and to see inside each other's worst faults the divine presence and the gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mevata, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, forget about the fault, look inside.